This is Real Talk, the podcast with Devin Wieters, where we talk all things inclusion and have a little bit of fun, too. Remember to leave a 5-star review and enjoy the show.
Hey, guys. Welcome to another episode of Real Talk. I'm Devin Wieters. Today on the show, we have Sue Newsome. She is a sex and relationship therapist from the UK, and she has a lot of great stuff to say about sex and disability. That being said, as you can imagine, this episode will contain explicit content, and enjoy the show. Hey guys, today we have Sue Newsome on the show, and she is a sex and relationship expert, and she has a lot of great things to say about sex and disability. And so, as you can imagine, this podcast will contain explicit content, so you may want to just put earbuds on or something. But, yeah, she has a lot of great stuff to say, and enjoy the show. Hi, Sue. Tell us about yourself, and then we'll go from there.
Hi, Devon. Thanks for the opportunity of being part of your podcast today. So my name is Sue Newsome. I live in the UK. And I work as a sex and relationship therapist and a sexual educator. I've been working in this field since 2001, and I work with individuals and couples, and a significant part of my work is supporting people with disability to help them find sexual expression and sexual fulfillment.
How did you get into this field?
So this is my second career. My first career was in IT, and a great time working in that field, but it was a very competitive environment, very dynamic. And after in excess of 15 years in that profession, I think I was starting to, my body was feeling a little bit worn out of the whole stress of traveling and the pressures of the work environment. And parallel to me doing that work, I'd started to do some personal development, and I realized that I didn't have a very great relationship around my own sexuality. So that really triggered me to get some training, and I trained as a counsellor, I trained as a tantra teacher, and I trained as a sex and relationship therapist. And it was in 2001 that I quit being a corporate citizen and I started my own business. So I launched my private practice working with individuals and couples, and it was in 2009 that I was first asked whether I would consider working with people with disability. And I was, I found I had a huge yes to that. And that was the start of me developing my work with this particular client group.
So tell us about some of the stigma and positive things that you've seen around sex and disability.
Generally, in the sort of collective, at a sort of society level, there's a level of discomfort about the idea of sex and disability. And that still pervades today. But if someone has a disability, that somehow means that they don't have sexual desire, they don't have sexual thoughts, and that there's people have a reluctance to explore how they might help and support people in expressing themselves sexually. There's a kind of like a bit of a hands-off attitude. So I think that's a general stigma that I've noticed. And then I think at a more personal level, some of the people that I've met over the years, they struggle in their home environments because, you know, there may be members of their care team who have a really negative attitude around sex, or really you know, really struggle with the idea of people being sexual, and that when they encounter that negativity, it does have a quite an impact on them. So I think those are some of the stigmas and difficulties. I think some of the positives have been to do with, you know, people's determination to find some, you know, sense of sexual enjoyment. I think also creativity. That you know, sometimes we do have to think outside the box a little bit, and we do have to overcome some particular situation that we're dealing with. But the sense of celebration and relief when we get over it is just fantastic. And so I think that, though, you know, that's some of what I've experienced in my work so far.
So tell us about some of the psychological symptoms that you see people go through.
So what I've experienced is that people's frustration around their sexual expression, that, and them feeling very quite isolated with that can really, you know, trigger a depressed state. So that I've certainly encountered and met with clients who, yeah, have really struggled with depression, and a big part of that depression has been their sense of powerlessness around their sexual enjoyment, and them not being able to see a way through that. So I think that's one of the psychological impacts. I think sometimes there's a, you know, the rage that people feel, that when they hit the obstacles, or they feel like they're being told to, like, close down their sexuality, and that can sometimes they turn that rage on themselves. You know, that's another impact I've come across. I think, yeah, those are the, I guess those would be the, you know, the main ones that I've encountered. So they're definitely people tipping into a depressed state. Yeah.
What are some of the common complaints you get from your clients?
So complaints, I'm just trying to, well, first of all, I think a common complaint is that the,
if that's not the right word, forgive me, I just couldn't find.
No, that's okay. Yeah, no, I think I understand what you're asking. So I think certainly in this country, that a common complaint is that often my clients have a lot of interaction with healthcare professionals for, you know, lots of different reasons. And generally, healthcare professionals do not inquire about their, you know, about their sex life. So I'll give you an example. The very first time I worked with someone with physical disability, it was a guy, and he'd had an accident that had left him paralyzed from the waist down. So he was a tetraplegic. And he, after his accident, so prior to his accident, he was fully active sexually. And then he had the accident, and he had to go into a spinal rehabilitation unit. And he was there for 18 months to go through the processes that he needed in order to then be able to live independently. And in those 18 months, no one talked about or asked him or raised the subject of sex. And that was a major frustration for him. He left the rehabilitation unit, and he lived independently. He was with his care team were with him 24/7, but it was through his own inquiry and his own determination that he then looked into, you know, what is the situation for people with spinal cord injury and their capacity to experience sexual pleasure. And he researched that, and he found that in the US there'd been some research projects around spinal cord injury and orgasm, and that the results had been positive. So he said, right, okay, I want to explore this for myself. And that was, you know, that was it, but that was through his own determination.
And for some, at least here in the US, I'm sure the UK is better from what I've heard about y'all's, like, disability system, for lack of a better term. But there isn't as many adult services as there is children's services. So sometimes adults have to go to, like, pediatric specialists because there are no adult specialists around here. And no matter how good they might be, I mean, I love mine to death. I mean, she's awesome, but, like, you don't want to really talk about sex in, like, a pediatric setting. Like,
yeah, I mean, I don't know that it's significantly that much better over here, but I totally, and yeah, of course you don't want to be talking about sex and with someone who's a specialist for children.
Yeah.
I mean, another example I can share, Devon, is that I worked with a couple, and the couple, they have, both of them have cerebral palsy, and they wanted to investigate the possibility of conceiving, to have a baby, and the female, so she was her gynecologist, who was very supportive of what she was investigating and what she wanted to find out for herself. So, and so she was fortunate in that, but she, you know, it had taken her quite a few years to find a medical professional who was receptive to what, you know, her what she was questioning and what she wanted to investigate for herself and for her relationship.
Yeah, it's crazy that stigma still exists. Now, where can people go in the US, I mean in the UK at least, to find something like that? Because I've sort of started looking for my own just curiosity, and we can find nobody. So, like, what website can people go to, at least in the UK, to, like, find?
So in the UK, there is it's a charity, and it's called Outsiders, and it's been in place for over 20 years. It was founded by a woman who's quite a pioneer. Her name is Dr. Tuppy Owens. She set up this charity, and it is specifically for people with any form of disability to explore relationships and find sexual pleasure. So Outsiders is the charity where they can make connections. They have, well, prior to the pandemic, they would have regional get-togethers, and they'd be encouraged. You know, sex was absolutely on the agenda. It was like, you know, if you want to have a hookup, if you want to explore a relationship, well, you know, we're going to encourage that. It's not a taboo. And as a result of that charity, that has then has launched a website, which is the TLC Trust. And the TLC Trust has directories on there of different types of practitioner who are experienced and willing to work with people with disability around their sexual satisfaction. So some of the practitioners are sex workers, some of them are sex therapists, some of them are professional dominatrix. So it's a small directory, but it's growing, and it is in different geographical regions in this country. So, you know, that is a place where, people can go and try and find, you know, resources that they they might be looking for.
I know you're not from the US, but can you kind of maybe think of a US version of that?
The only thing I could think of, right, just off the top of my head, would be to look at the, in the US, there is the Organization for Sexual Surrogates. It's called IPSA. And I think that's the international, oh, sorry, I don't know what it stands for, forgive me. But anyway, there is a, the US has a, like an organization that trains sexual surrogates. And so there is that possibility that some of the sexual surrogates, they would be available to support people with disability.
What is a sexual surrogate exactly?
Okay, a sexual surrogate is a is someone who has been through the relevant training, and they're available to when a client wants to have a sexual experience. So the idea of sexual surrogacy first came about with Masters and Johnson, which was back in the 1950s. They were the sort of pioneers of sex therapy and sexology, and they were based in the US. And they realized that with their male clients who were having sexual problems, that these male clients needed, who were not in a relationship, they needed someone that they could practice with, like if they were struggling with their erections or their ejaculations and orgasm. So they developed this idea of a sexual surrogate, i.e., a professional that the male clients could either get some experience with or they could practice with. And that, so that's, so a sexual surrogate is, they are providing a sexual experience, but it's always got a developmental goal to it. So there's always, it's about trying to work towards a specific outcome.
Okay, I didn't know such a thing existed. That is like really cool, or I've never thought about that.
Yeah, it's I think it's a really, really important part of working with sexuality, because the thing about sexuality, we can, we can spend so much time talking about it, but there's a point where the talking has to stop, and it's about practice, or it's about trying to gain some experience. And so for example, at the moment I've been working with a client, a male client, who wants to lose his virginity. He has cerebral palsy, and he has been completely infantilized. So he's no one has been wanting to support him, and then he's decided to do something about it. And through, I've been able to support him finding a appropriate sexual surrogate, and he's now, lost his virginity, which is, and he's absolutely delighted about that.
Disability and LGBTQ stuff. Like, where have you seen that intersect?
So what I guess what I've experienced in terms of the clients that I've worked with is that I found, my clients on the whole to be incredibly inspiring, and I've learned a lot from them. And that when some of my clients have actually been felt they've got the permission, and they've got the, they can, they felt that they can explore their sexuality, that they do want to explore all aspects of it. They do want to, they do want to explore kink. They do want to explore having sex with different genders, and they want to explore, different relationship models. They maybe want to do sexual exploration outside of a couple. So that, yeah, there's not the necessarily the concern about labels. It's like, oh, if I like this, does it mean that I'm kinky, or does it mean that I'm diverse? It's like, no, it just means that you're a healthy sexual being. Because it's, if it's everything's done consensually, then that's great.
So, what about people, like, that aren't comfortable with certain things? Like, how do you like kind of gauge what they're comfortable with?
Well, I whenever I work with a client, I spend, quite a lot of time really understanding their situation and their level of understanding about themselves sexually, even to the point of the sort of the appropriate language to use, and what, what would be a good outcome for them. So, am I answering your question?
Yes.
Yeah, so that for one, what is acceptable and liberating for one client is going to be very, very different to another client. I mean, again, if rather than talking abstract terms, if I talk about specific client situations, so one client, the one I've already mentioned, who wanted to actually lose his virginity, whereas another client just wanted someone that he could talk to about sex, and not be judged, not feel judged, and just ask lots and lots of questions about, the sex that he'd seen, portrayed in the media. How true was that? How real was it? And wanted to understand what sex between adults was really like, but not wanting to particularly explore anything himself at that stage, just wanted an environment where sex could be talked about.
Yeah, it's so like taboo. Like, of course, like it has to be taboo in some places. Like, you can't go to everywhere talking about sex. I know that, but like, in the disability community, especially, like it's like really taboo.
Yeah, and I think one of the tensions that I've really come across is it's the tension with care workers support. We tend to call them carers in the UK. These are the professionals who, support a person with disability around their everyday life, and that for some care workers they do not feel comfortable about sex, because that might be to do with their own personal situation, or it might be to do with their religious beliefs. But it's when they, rather than just being able to say, well, I don't want to talk about sex, they make their client wrong. Does that make sense? That
Yes.
they create a tension, where the person with disability then doesn't feel that they end up feeling, wrong, or that they've been inappropriate, and that's been quite a big problem I've encountered with some of the clients I've worked with.
Yeah, it's especially if you're like me and from a faith tradition, and especially hard when your parents like don't necessarily subscribe to the same like faith tradition, so they don't really understand like the, I don't want to say crisis, but like tension, I guess you're going through.
And I think tension is that's a good word. It's that real, it's a dilemma. And it's how are you going to get resolve that for
And
yourself?
how do you guys social services work in the UK? Like, if two people with disabilities were to get married, how would that affect their benefits? And if like an able-bodied person were to marry a person with a disability, how would that affect their benefits? 'Cause that's a big thing over here.
I have to be absolutely honest. I honestly don't know about that. I don't know how, if two people with disability, if they were to get married or even live together, if that would affect their entitlement to benefits. I'm honestly not sure.
Yeah, because in the US, it's like such a big thing, which I don't understand why, because we have enough people scamming the system already, so you're gonna take it away from the people that need it. I mean, what? But if you were to live together, like that wouldn't be a problem. But from what I've read, like if especially if you were to marry an able-bodied person, then they would start looking at both of your incomes as one income, and then your benefits would either get taken away or slashed. I don't
Wow.
know about people, like two people with disabilities getting married. Like I've heard different things about that, but yeah, it's a huge thing over here with income and.
Yeah. I mean, if I can just share with you something that has just occurred in the UK. I mean, this is it's the only example I know of in the whole country, but and it is a client that I've worked with, and he was putting in an application for his care package, and his care package is, the funds that he receives in order to for him to pay for the care that he needs. So he puts forward an application. He put forward an application, and then he then chooses how he spends the funds, in terms of, the level of care and that he has in place. And he, in his latest application, he included an amount that was to cover his sessions with me, because his argument was that he needed this for his overall well-being. Him exploring his, sexual fulfillment was, part, he needed that for his mental well-being, his physical well-being, and he got that agreed. So, but that is the I don't know if it's happened in other situations, but I know, obviously I know about this one because it's someone that I have done some work with.
So, tell us about OT After Dark and how you found them and that experience because they are just the best.
Yeah, they contacted me, and it was after I think I'd been involved in an interview with the, I think it was the New York Post, and that was about sex and disability, and specifically my work with a particular client. And they, OT After Dark, contacted me, and I had a meeting with them, and I was just so impressed with what they do. So they asked me if I would be, I would be like a guest speaker, and I jumped at the chance. It was great to have that opportunity to talk about this area of my work.
Yeah, I guessed it on that podcast, and I don't know when it's going to be out. We recorded it months ago, but yeah, it will be out, and I'm so excited for that to come out because they're just the best.
Yeah.
So, would you like to end this with a little rapid fire? And first, is there anything you want to add? And then we'll get into the rapid fire.
I think just to acknowledge what you're doing by putting out these podcasts, and that if anything that is in our talk tonight gives someone some inspiration or a little bit more determination, that then that's great.
Okay, rapid fire, favorite food.
Favorite food, chicken.
Last show you binged and loved.
Last show, oh my God, that was before pandemic. I can't even remember. It feels like a lifetime ago.
Do you watch British Bake Off?
Of course.
I know, who doesn't, right? Inclusion is
Inclusion is everything and everybody.
fill in the blank. I'm most grateful for.
Sorry, say that again, Devon.
What are you most grateful for?
I'm most grateful for my life.
Favorite song?
Favorite song is, oh, I'm going to say it's Oh, I don't know. There's so many. Diana Ross, Ain't No Mountain High Enough.
Oh, that is a jam. I can't. That is a jam. Can't Leave Home Without.
Can't Leave Home Without my smile.
Ah, that's a nice answer. That's a good way to end it. Don't leave home without your smile. Well, thank you for coming on today. I'm so sorry for all the technical difficulties and time zone difficulties, but thank you for hanging in there.
You're very welcome, and I wish you and all your listeners a good rest of the day.
Okay, we will see you guys next episode. Bye, guys.
You've been listening to Real Talk the Podcast. Connect with us on Instagram at Real Talk Pod Official, Twitter at Devin Real Talk, and Facebook at Real Talk Podcast Official. If you'd like to support the show, you can do that by using the link in the show notes. Stay tuned for the next episode.